And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post podcast, where I look for any excuse at all to have the GOAT, Jackie McMullen, on to talk about a story today that we're going to get to in a second. But Jackie, welcome back. How are you doing?
I'm just jealous of your name, like The Low Post. That is so great. I'm just so jealous of that, Zach. I'm not even kidding.
It's not a bad name.
I wish my name was Low.
It's not. Well, you know,
like
when you're
Post, doesn't work.
Some people used to think it was funny when I was a kid to call me Zach High.
That's not dumb.
My dad threatened to name me Hal. It's like Hal O would be my name.
Oh, gosh. So I have one of these. So my married name is Boyle. And everybody, when I was pregnant with my first child, said, are you going to name him Lance? You know, like Lance the Boyle? Uh-huh.
I like that you gave them really that voice. Goofy. That was the appropriate voice for that person, or that generic
goodness.
Person.
And they all thought they were the first ones to ever think of that joke. Come on now. Be creative.
A bad period for me was when I don't know if you remember this as a parent during this time, but in the 80s, 90s, so I don't know when I may be dating you inappropriately, when the Zach, he's a Lego maniac commercials came out on TV for Legos, that was a bad, 6 months for me, because I got Zach a Lego maniac a lot.
I'm so sorry. And you know what? I think so if it was early 90s, I was a new mother and I didn't watch any TV at all and had no idea what was going around me except for spit and throw up and diapers. So
children,
it does not register with me.
Children really do. People undersell the degree that having a child can. You know, we got a call from a school today, school in quotes, fake school that my daughter's at.
Right.
Anytime you get a call from a school and your daughter's like three or whatever, it's not good. This one, some kid hit my daughter in the head with a toy car, and they just wanted to warn us that she's going to have a little mark on her. And my daughter is feisty as all hell, so my first thought was, uh-oh, did she beat him up? And they just said, no, she was very brave. She didn't really cry. She just got sort of angry, and then she calmed down, and she's playing nicely now. Just FYI. And I wanted to go find this kid. Of course you do. Yeah, I wanted to go find him. Yeah.
Can I just tell you, Zach, no age is going to be good to get the call from the school, okay?
I guess that's probably true.
Your son's doing great.
Yeah, you made the honor roll, right? Like, that's not a phone call? No.
So my son was a freshman at Westford Academy, the Grey Ghost. He's there like a month, and we get a phone call, and I'm like, really, Doug? My son's name is Doug. And they said, yeah, you got to come down and get him. I'm like, Doug, what did you do? So there's you can't leave campus at Westford Academy. You're not allowed to leave campus unless you're a senior. So did my son leave a campus with a senior girl to go to Dunkin' Donuts? I couldn't even be mad at him. I'm like, street kid. What great street cred. I couldn't even be mad at him.
No, I'm not mad. I'm not mad at him either. That's well done.
There you go.
Anyway, the reason you're on this podcast is not to talk about your children, who are surely wonderful. Sometimes the best ideas are just the simplest ideas. And you had a great idea, which was, let me go to Boston, where I know people very well, and you've struck up clearly a good relationship with Kyrie, and try to figure out what's going on with Jaylen Brown, who Brown and Tatum, and to a much lesser extent Rozier, have been sort of the poster children for something's just not right with Boston. Like nothing fatally wrong now that they're 16 and 10, they're hot now again, but like something is just in the ether, just isn't right. Let me zero in on this guy. And you came out with a feature today about sort of what's been happening with Jaylen Brown, how all these people are trying to reach Jaylen Brown. Marcus Smart's yelling at him in the locker room. Kyrie's trying to be a leader and get to him. I just want to step back for a second. Why did you choose Jaylen of all the players? Why was he more – like Tatum, as you point out in the story, has been benched for portions of two games at least and probably another that I'm forgetting about, and the subject of some of Brad Stevens' ire in the locker room, I think. So, but why Jaylen over him? Why Jaylen?
Well, I think because the real impetus, I think, was when the Real Plus Minus came out, Zach, and I knew he wasn't doing well, but his number was so poor. He was 413th overall. And I'm like, whoa, okay. He's even worse than I thought. And the other thing is, you know, when you look at the numbers, and you're very good with numbers, and you start looking at the analytics, it became apparent that when Jaylen Brown was on the floor at the Celtics, as we point out in the story today, they were the worst offensive team in the NBA. That's pretty startling. The other thing was, that interested me is just knowing Jalen a little bit. He's a thinker. I think he overthinks at times. And I knew that this would be really bothering him. Jason Tatum is one of those positive self-talk guys, and he's just got that beautiful offensive game. And so we forgive him for almost everything, right? Because you're mad at him, and then all of a sudden he spins to the right, dribbles twice to the left, and then pulls up to hit a three-pointer, and you go, what the heck? So somehow, you know, you just go, oh yeah, he's struggling, but go ahead, boy, keep struggling, because he looks so great when he does it. So, Jalen to me was also one that I know has difficulty sometimes communicating with his teammates. He's a different kind of cat, and I like it that about him. He's curious. He's got interests outside of basketball. While everybody else is at the All-Star game trying to score, you know, a ticket to Michael Jordan's party, he's going to the Tech Summit. He spoke to a class at Harvard. People know all this. A Renaissance man, if you will. And he's probably not quite as much of that as he may think he is. And I think sometimes that causes him some issues in his own locker room.
I don't think
they dislike him, Zach, but I think they're like, well, what is with this dude, right?
I think that's very interesting that you said that, because I was waiting for that last part. There is, I want to choose my words carefully here. There is some thought that, I think how you just put it is right, that he's not much of that as he thinks he is, or that, you know, there's some sort of like, oh, there goes Jalen again talking about, you know, whatever, yoga. And
right,
I think there's some
right.
like smirking a little bit from parts of that locker room.
Yes.
The other reason I'm interested about why you picked him is, well, there's the obvious one that he's not starting anymore.
Right.
Which we'll
and
get
look
to.
How well they've done without him. Six in a row without him. Right.
We'll get to it. Is I think before the season, what's happened to the Celtics before this, what are they, six in a row now, five in a row?
Yes, six, yep.
Before this streak, they were a disappointment to us, and I think a disappointment internally to them, but in a way that I don't think really surprised anybody there. And
that's, yeah, you're right.
And very Danny good, and astute. Brad and others there would have warned us before the season, it's going to take time, and I don't care what these guys say. These guys who were elevated into big roles last year are going to get frustrated, and it's going to have some sort of on-court manifestation. And I think, reading between some lines, I think Jalen was the guy they were actually most worried about, more so than Tatum, more so than Rozier, more so than anybody else of that crew. And I'm curious if you heard any of that, and if you can pinpoint sort of why that was.
Well, it's funny because he was the one he's the one I pinpointed before the season began. And I think I said it publicly a bunch of times. He's going to have the biggest adjustment, because think about what happened with these guys. You know, Gordon goes out early, then Kyrie goes out late. Now all of a sudden they're in the Eastern Conference Finals and they're taking huge shots. Jaylen Brown scored 30 points, Zach, in a playoff game against the Milwaukee Bucks. And they start thinking, well, wow, I'm on my way. Now, I knew that you'll always find room for a guy like Jason Tatum. I'll say it again, because he is so gifted offensively. And let's be honest, Jalen's still a work in progress on that end of the floor.
And Tatum's shooting has sustained. He's shooting 43% from three again, which
right.
I didn't think he would quite hit that mark again, and not that many people did. And of course, Jalen, whose shooting was a big question mark, and he like hugely exceeded expectations. I think he
right.
shot 39% from deep last year, is down to 29.9 today.
Exactly. And you know, the one thing that everybody talked about with them, and you saw it on display last night for those of you who watched the New Orleans Boston game, this idea of he's got this great athleticism, and he relies on it a lot. And who wouldn't? He's got that great quick first step. He slashes to the basket. He drives well to the basket. But then when you get there, you've got to make decisions. If there are two or three guys converging on you, that means somebody's open, and you got to kick it back out. And last night was the perfect example. He goes driving in there. There's three guys on him. He's a little out of control. The shot clock's winding down. There's Marcus Morris, who's having the game of his life, standing there with his hands open, waiting for you to throw him the ball. And finally, you know, when he's absolutely in trouble, trap throws this wild pass that Morris can't even get his hands on, and you have a shot clock violation. And those are the kind of plays that it's just an utter lack of awareness. And
yeah,
you know, they've certainly been shown to him on film, and he's only 22. It's going to take a little time. He'll get there. He's just not there yet.
Yeah,
and you know what, Zach, they can't wait. I think that's sort of the point Kyrie's making is, look, he's going to be really, really good, but in the meantime, we can't wait. Like, we got to go here. We're trying to win right this second.
Yeah, that was one of the wow moments from the piece where I literally mouthed the word wow, was when Kyrie, look, whether he's talking about the, not the moon landing, what does he think is, what does he think? Oh, the flat earth. Whether he's talking about the flat earth or basketball, he does not mince words. He's got a lot of, I mean, you quote him at length and it's just, it's a spectacular window into his mind. And he says at one point, we can't wait on you. And that's like, damn, okay. And then he has another quote about like, hey, this isn't a world anymore where you're, I think he says decent players, where you're surrounded by decent players that you're better than and you're going to play over. Like, this is a new, like, that was some harsh language. When he's saying that to you, are you nodding along in your head like, oh, this is good?
Oh, yes. Well, whenever you get Kyrie alone and you get him to talk to you, which seems to be happening a little bit this year, he's been very vocal with everybody. But, you know, Kyrie and I have known each other a very, very long time, and he's usually pretty real with me and what he's saying. I was nodding my head, but you know what? That, to me, hits to the crux of the whole issue, doesn't it? Just because you scored 30 points in a playoff, you were Jason Tatum, and you nearly beat LeBron James, guess what? We're starting back at zero this year, and the big boys are back, and you might just have to wait your turn. And as Jalen says in the piece himself, that's been the biggest challenge for him. He hears all these expectations that have been ratcheted up, and he's thinking, well, how am I supposed to meet those expectations? I'm getting less shots, less minutes, less opportunities. And to Danny Ainge's point, which I thought was a great one, hey, I played 18 years in the league. I probably got 5 years where I played the exact role I wanted to play. And let's be real, Zach, probably three of those were when he was in Sacramento. Right?
Yeah, it was interesting to say you don't get the role that you want. You just don't. Like, if you want to be on a great team, you don't get the role that you want. One guy gets the role that they want, basically. And Marcus Smart is in the store saying, hey, we were all stars. All of us were stars. Now we got to get used to some other stuff. Yeah, the expectation, I'm going to read people the expectations quote, although they should all read the story. This is from Jaylen Brown saying, expectations have been raised, passive voice, always a giveaway. Expectations have been raised, but your responsibility goes down, so it's hard to reach those expectations. And of course, my question immediately was, whose expectations does he care about? Is he talking about my expectation? My expectation is now to score 20 a game, or is he talking about the expectations that others have of me? Because I got the sense that he was talking about what he expects of sort of his stature in the league.
I think you're right, but I think he's never a guy that's going to say, I don't read social media. He does. He pays attention to what people say. When I mentioned the trade rumors, which of course they're incessant because this obsession with Anthony Davis will continue. And, you know, it might actually turn into something, Zach, before we know it. And Jaylen Brown's name comes up all the time. And he knows that. I brought that up and I said, are you aware of it? He said, of course I am. So he's aware of everything. He listens and he wants to be great. And he thinks other people think he should be great. So think about all the pressure you've put on yourself and the pressure you're feeling from all these invisible people who don't even know you. Worst thing a young player can do.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned Anthony Davis because, that's the forward-looking Jaylen Brown lens, and the backward-looking one is Kawhi Leonard, because that was the piece they would not put in, and they just wouldn't do it. They wouldn't put him in, and their thinking was, A, Jaylen is awesome. B, we put in a lot of our good draft picks that we own from other teams. I don't know if they put in all of them, but they put in some of the good ones, and, and plus some young guys. And C, like, we don't know if Kawhi Leonard is ever going to be 2 years ago Kawhi Leonard anymore, and if he's even 90% of that, well, that last 10% is the hardest 10% to find in the NBA, and that 10% is why you trade Jaylen Brown. And if we don't know that exists, we're not trading Jaylen Brown. They were never trading Tatum. Tatum's off. So just by process of elimination, Jaylen Brown is the swing piece. And if he's in, now I know Pop wants to compete and DeMar is an all NBA player. He's 29, whatever he is, he's in his prime. Like, if Jaylen Brown's in the deal and one or two of those good picks, there'd be less of those good picks because Jaylen Brown would be in the deal. If Jaylen Brown's in the deal, I have to think San Antonio says, well, we got to think about, you know, even though that sets our timetable back a little bit and he's 10 years younger than LaMarcus and all this, like, we got to think about it. And now they're watching Kawhi go off for the last 2 or 3 weeks, play his way into the MVP conversation. And there has to be some thinking within the Celtics of, boy, Jalen's kind of stagnated. Yeah, he's only 21 or 22 or whatever he is, but I wonder if we played that right.
Well, but you forgot about D, and D is we don't have any assurances Kawhi Leonard will stay in Boston after this year. That to me is A. I think that's the biggest reason the Celtics didn't.
You're right. I forgot A. A's, a big one.
So that's the biggest one. Because
by the way,
if they got,
by the way, Jackie, they may face the same question with Anthony Davis if it comes down to it. Like, they're, I don't know that they, if they ever get lucky enough, and it's not all luck because of the war chest they've built to have a shot at trading for Anthony Davis, I don't know that they'll be able to do it with a commitment beyond next season.
Right. So another interesting dilemma. I do think that's the biggest reason with Jalen, but I don't know. If Kawhi came to you and said, if you trade for me, I'll sign an extension with you next week.
You'd do it.
I would do it. I would have done it. And I would have done it before. Because I still think, I should make this clear, I still think Jaylen Brown's going to be okay. I really do. I think he's a really good young player that's finding his way, that does overthink, that's going to settle in. You know, he's already, since he's come off the bench, the numbers are better. You know, I want him on my team. But I want Kawhi Leonard more. I don't think that's stating the obvious, isn't it?
Well, no, I wrote a whole big piece about Jaylen Brown and Kawhi Leonard before Kawhi got traded. And the point of it was, like, I don't think this is an easy decision for Boston because I'm super high on Jaylen Brown. Super high. And I was last year. Now this year has taken a little wind out of those sails, but it's early. You know, he has the potential to be a really, really good two-way player. And,
The defense.
Right.
You know, the defense, Zach, you know?
And as you mentioned, playmaking is sort of, it's not even the last frontier for him. It's like a frontier he hasn't even explored. It's like a frontier on a different continent. You know, he averages like, his assist rate is like 7% of Boston's possessions he gets an assist on. It's like, you know, somewhere between Hassan Whiteside and a center who actually passes. It's very low for a wing player who dribbles a lot. But, right. All the stuff you're talking about, you know, oh, he's in a crowd, he's out of control, he passes too late. Like, that's the art of the NBA is, like, when do you take the extra dribble or when is the extra dribble bad for you? When do you need to get off of it early? When is it better to kind of hold it for another dribble and mm-hmm. see what the defense gives you? Like, that's what the Nets talk about with Caris LeVert. I mean, you look at like I've hit Zach LaVine pretty hard for his assist to turnover ratio is like 1-1 because he's not good at those decisions. You know who else is having trouble with that? Donovan Mitchell. Donovan Mitchell's assist to turnover ratio is like 1.2-1. It's not good. Like I think that's a young player thing. Like it, very few young guys come into the league with the ability with a facility at that art. That is the art of the game. But he's behind the curve playmaking, passing wise. Even for a young player, given his role and his stature on the team. And to me, that's the biggest question. If you think he can, because Kawhi's not a great playmaker. Kawhi's like three assists a game, 3.5 assists a game. If you think Jaylen Brown can get to that level and beyond in a high usage role, then there's a universe in which he becomes if you told me he makes a third team all NBA once or twice in his career, I wouldn't be like completely shocked. But even that player is still only 90% of peak Kawhi Leonard. And again, that 10%, that's the whole thing. That 10% is what wins you a championship.
I think one of the interesting things in that piece again was when Danny Ainge said, unless you're an elite, elite player, you don't get to choose your role. So I'm sure Jaylen Brown is going to read that, because I certainly didn't tell Jaylen Brown that Danny said that, and say, well, wait a minute. I am going to be an elite player, aren't I? And so, to your point, we don't know yet. We don't know yet. You know, every day someone asks me, who's going to be, well, before, not so much right now this year. Everyone's in love with Jason Tatum because of the way he can score. But people used to say to me, who do you think will be better, Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum? And I always say, well, they're going to be completely different because Jaylen Brown has a chance to be like Kawhi Leonard. And by that, I mean top 10 in both offense and defense. And that's never going to happen with Jason Tatum. But Jason Tatum might end up being like one of the great, great scorers of his generation. Or he might not.
No,
I don't know. It's too soon.
I think Tatum's on his way. Jaylen, I think that ceiling is too high for him offensively, but he could still be a top 20 kind of player in the NBA. The elite player comments from Danny. I wanted to talk with you. I mean, you've been around the league for a long time now, and I thought the KD comments on LeBron last week. When you talked about, mm-hmm. you know, what it's like to play with LeBron and how almost everyone else in the league has to subsume themselves into a secondary and third role around LeBron, and he talked about Kevin Love and Chris Bosh and all that. And I, you know, that was made to be about LeBron, and it was, but like, LeBron's the best player. Like, that's just what happens is, like, if you want to win a championship, you have to have two or three, usually three, great players. And just by definition, guys two and three aren't going to do as much as they were when they were number one. And you, so you have a choice in the NBA. You either win or you get to be the number one option all the time. And if you're the number one option all the time and you're like the 11th best player in the league, you will not win the championship ever. It's just not ever going to happen. If you want to win, you have to join up with numbers two, three, and four, whatever it is. And someone is going to have to be the third option when all of you are on the floor. Like, that's not that different from playing with James Harden or playing with Russell Westbrook or blah, blah, blah. And I think what it really did was highlight how completely unique the Warriors are in that they have four of the 15 best players in the league, or four of the 20 best players in the league, but three of them are such incredible shooters that their value almost maintains itself when they don't have the ball. And the fourth of them is a guy who, if he shoots three times in a game, you don't really care because his value is all wrapped up in everything else. It's a completely, the pairing of Curry and Durant in particular is almost, it's almost unprecedented in how, in finding two top four players, I think two top three players, whose value maintains almost at its peak level when they don't have the ball. I mean, that's just, it's so historically special that it has almost created these discussions about, like, oh, is LeBron a good teammate? Is it easy to play with LeBron? Like, what the ease with which, whatever challenges there are playing with LeBron are not historically unique for great, great players, I don't think. The Warriors are historically unique in how easily they mesh greatness across three or four different guys.
I agree. And you know, I've been critical of LeBron here and there, but not in this case. What do you want the guy to do? Look what he dragged to the NBA Finals last year. Are you joking? I mean, tell me who's the best player? I guess it's D-Wade, right? Is he the best player that LeBron's ever played with? We're going to give it to D-Wade, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah.
Probably. I think so. And then who's next? Bosh or Kevin Love? Like, the drop-off is so significant. Well, and this is, you know, now on his third team, right? Now on his third franchise. So, I you know, it's so, I hate to compare teams historically because there was so little player movement back in the day, right? And you know, the Bird and the Magic era. You just didn't leave your team. You stayed with your team. Free agency existed, but you just didn't see the player movement. I mean, Larry Bird wanted to begin and end his career as a Celtic. Same thing with Magic Johnson. He was going to begin and end as a Laker. So, for this movement to see a player of Kevin Durant's caliber, a player of LeBron James's caliber, to actually switch teams, for an old timer like me, I'm still getting used to it. And I do think the Warriors are one of the most unique teams I've ever seen in my life because of it. For a player of Durant's stature to go there and to have Steph Curry not even break a sweat in terms of what it meant for him and his role on the team, and for Durant to be willing to step back and not feel the need to dominate the game, I think that says a lot about the two of them. Now, would LeBron be able to do that? I say it's a moot point. He's the best player in the game, and he's proven time and time again he makes you better. So if he's going to dominate and you're going to play a little less or get few shots, too bad.
Well, and to be perfectly clear, what I really should have said about the Warriors' uniqueness is it's not just two top three players. It's two perimeter players. Like, most of the classic combo two duos are big guy, little guy, pick and roll partners. And
sure.
Steph and KD
Shaq and Kobe.
Yeah, Steph and KD can run a pick and roll here and there. And Durant is a completely anomalous player, but he's essentially a perimeter player who can do some interior things. The two perimeter ball dominant guys that mesh that beautifully without diminishing each other and can take on a third and fourth guy, it's unprecedented. And also, like, Kevin Love, Chris Bosh, those names come up. It's like, okay, well, we saw what Kevin Love is the best player on a team. They didn't make the playoffs ever, not once. Now, I think some of that is unfair to him because those Minnesota teams had injuries and terrible benches, and their plus-minus was always outstanding when Kevin Love was on the floor and a complete pile of crapola when he was on the bench. But, like, I don't think anybody in the world at their absolute apex thought those guys could be the best player on a championship team. That's just the reality of the NBA, is that you just need to have a guy that's one level above that. And if that makes everybody else fall in line below that, then that's the way that it is. Anyway, enough talk about Kevin Durant. You mentioned before, so the Celtics, by the way, after their underwhelming start, are now 16-10, tied with Indiana in the loss column, one game behind the Sixers, two games behind the Bucks, three games behind the Raptors, and they are in the middle of an embarrassingly easy part of their schedule. Their offense since November 16th, which is when they beat the Raptors in overtime, is number two in the league, behind only the Rockets. And they're actually up to kind of caught me by surprise. They're up to 11th in offense for the season. And obviously I think still first in defense. This is slowly shaping into a good team. And again, rocket science, the schedule helps. You get a bunch of crap teams in front of you. You beat the Bulls by 9,000 points and Jim Boylan has practice for 7 hours the next day. Your stats look better.
Right.
The question to you is, this has coincided with Gordon Hayward coming off the bench and then Jaylen Brown getting hurt and then returning in a bench role and a starting lineup of Kyrie, Marcus Smart, Marcus Morris, Al Horford, and who am I forgetting? Oh, Tatum. I don't get the sense that they're moving off that lineup anytime soon. What about you?
No, and they shouldn't. But if you're asking me, will that be their lineup when they open the playoffs in April, I'm going to tell you no.
Interesting.
Because I really believe that it's going to take that long. I've talked to so many NBA players who have had horrific injuries, and they all tell me, don't even look for Gordon Hayward to be right till March. And I do think when Gordon Hayward is right, completely and totally right, he'll be in that starting lineup. Of course, I watched Gordon Hayward during his years with the Jazz, but because they're on the West Coast, I have to confess, I didn't see him nearly much as I should have. And in the short time I've been around him here in Boston, of course, we only saw 5 minutes of him last year, I'm just really impressed with the way he can spray the ball around the court. And I do believe this, that if you're going to go deep, I want the ball out of Kyrie's hands. I want Gordon Hayward to handle the ball more for me and almost play Kyrie almost like an off guard, because let's face it, he's there for his offensive capabilities. I think it'll be a really great pairing in the postseason to have those two in your backcourt. And I know Gordon Hayward's a forward. I get that. I'm just talking because it's all positionless now. So I really believe come April, if Gordon Hayward can get back, and that's an if, I guess. I think we have to say that's a little bit of an if, both mentally and physically at the moment. I think he does end up in the starting lineup.
That's really interesting. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't think they're moving away from this group for a while now, or for a bit anyway. But I agree with you. I think if they're really going to make a run, if they're going to try and get by these top three teams in the East, I don't think this is the starting lineup that's going to do it. But I don't necessarily think you put both back in. I do. There's something about the physicality and the toughness of what the Marcuses bring that works surrounded by like that lineup that I was so excited about, the one that they started the season with and has floundered terribly. It just it felt a little small. I don't want to say soft because that's a radioactive word in sports. It just felt a little perimeter-y, a little lacking in just bulk and like the Marcuses are like cement walls. You can't move those dudes. And it also felt like, to your point, that Hayward was playing as if he were just Brown and Tatum, as if he were another secondary guy whose job was to catch the ball when Kyrie ran a pick and roll and kicked it to him, attack a closeout and move the chain, you know, pass it to the next guy, keep the machine moving. He's not that guy. He's a different guy than Brown and Tatum. He's more of a playmaker, and it just felt like they weren't figuring out how to make him different than those other guys, how to maximize those skills. And so they've decided for now it's as simple as we're going to separate them. We're going to stagger their minutes to a much larger degree. We can do that while we start him, but it's much easier to do it coming off the bench. And that doesn't feel like a permanent solution to me if they want to get to the best team they are. But I don't know what the end game is. It just something about this lineup, other than playing horrifically bad teams, it just kind of feels a little better to me than the lineup that was out there to begin the season. And I don't know if it's, I, I, I might only plug one of those guys back in. I don't know which one and for whom, but it feels like one of those Marcuses is going to be there to stay.
Well, I will tell you this. There's some urgency to the lineup now. Marcus Smart plays every second like it's his last, and often it is because he dives into the stands and breaks his thumb or, you know, whatever. And so there was a toughness, an urgency, a spark. I mean, if you look at Marcus Smart and you look at his stats, you'd say, well, what the heck is he doing in there? But he is the lifeblood of that team. You know, people ask me all the time, who's the leader of the Celtics? And, you know, Kyrie Irving's trying really hard to be the leader of the Celtics. I think it's a lot to ask somebody whose identity is 100% defense. They're a defensive team. That's Boston's identity. And that's the one thing Kyrie Irving is historically not very good at. So you're asking him a lot to be the face of a team that doesn't even really feature what he does best, right? So, but he has done a great job of stepping forward. He's trying like crazy. His defensive numbers are up. They're better. But if Marcus Smart had the anywhere near the ability of any of these other guys on the team, there'd be no question he was the leader. He's the one they listen to, they look to. And so putting him in the lineup made a ton of sense. He has the respect of that locker room. You know, I'm not sure Tatum and Brown do yet. They've got a ways to go. And you can't fool players. And you know what? It was a good move to move Gordon Hayward to the bench for the same reason. Everybody on that team understands how good Gordon Hayward can be. But you know what? Again, they don't have time to wait for what Gordon Hayward can be. They need someone that's ready to play now. And I think Brad Stevens did a good thing by moving him to the bench because, you know, those two are so closely tied because of their connections to Butler. The last thing you need is your players starting to resent you. Well, that's your favorite son. You're giving him chance after chance after chance that the other guys aren't getting. None of that's true. He moved Gordon Hayward to the bench. Gordon Hayward's handled it beautifully. So, you know, I think off they go for now. I wouldn't touch it. You know, they could be up to 20 straight by the time they get to play Milwaukee because, as you said, there's cupcakes coming up.
It's interesting you mentioned resentment. In you were talking about it in a different context. But, you know, I can't help but read these Kyrie quotes, and I wasn't there for these interviews. And it echoes stuff that he said before. But he just can't stop talking about how he's won a championship and knows what it feels like to make a big shot in the finals. And look, he made one of the five biggest shots in the history of basketball. He can talk all he wants.
He did.
I just wonder, like, sometimes you just, like, are the other Celtics players going to get tired of hearing about this? I don't even mean to make it an issue. It's just every time I read a Kyrie interview, it feels like he's talking about what they did in Cleveland. And if I could see the wrong person on the Celtics, whoever that is, in their head being like, man, I don't want to read about this anymore. Like, we all know we got to game seven last year. Like, it's not like we did nothing. Like, maybe I'm reading too much into it.
Well, I think he has some pretty high status among those guards.
Yeah, the young player, everyone in the NBA loves Kyrie.
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, and what he's accomplished is pretty incredible. And I remember when they were thinking about trading for him and the word was getting out, Rozier and Smart happened to be down. I think it was in Florida. And they ended up playing in a pickup game with Kyrie Irving. And when it was over, the two of them were like, can you imagine if he's actually with us? I mean, he's got that wow factor. It's like, I put him in the category of like Allen Iverson. Have you ever heard another player ever say a bad word about Allen Iverson? Never. Never. No matter what his foibles might be, he's just got the cred. And you know, it's funny, to a lesser degree, Carmelo Anthony. Have you ever heard another player dog Carmelo Anthony? It's usually the coaches in the front office, right? And so Kyrie, to me, is in that status. People have respect for him, and I know he has the respect of that locker room. Because one of the things he's done, which is really smart, is he listens. He listens to the other guys. He, you know, like he says in the stories, hey, I guess I didn't really know what I was doing. He's not saying he knows it all.
It's an unbelievable quote. I'm not going to spoil that quote any further. It's an unbelievable quote from Kyrie that I had to read twice to make sure I was digesting it correctly.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, you know, and he's very much in tune with Gordon. Really, in the preseason before Gordon had that horrible injury, I didn't get to see those sessions, but everyone told me, the two of them, the chemistry they had was incredible. So those two have the respect of one another. So I think for now he's in pretty good stead. I think there's still a bit of a Wow, Kyrie. And remember now, Tatum went to Duke. Kyrie's been, you know, grabbed Tatum while he was in college still, brought him under his wing, took him away in the summers with him. They were playing pickup with Durant together, you know, so he's established some pretty strong bonds with these young guys.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how they keep playing. I mean, you know, really the only thing that's changed for the Celtics other than the schedule is they've started making open shots. If you look at the numbers.
Right.
Since that date I just gave you, whatever it was, November 16th or whatever. No, this one is from the 26th when they start the streak. They're shooting 47% on open threes. And before that, they were shooting 34%. Well, there it is. I mean, they kept telling us we're getting good shots for the most part. We're just not making them. Now they're making them. I continue to think this is a really good team that's sort of laying in wait, but has more to go through, than we thought. So the Tatum thing I wanted to go back to. Because there was the game, mm-hmm. the Knicks game you mentioned, where he gets yanked a minute into this third quarter or something like that?
Yeah, it was one minute and 10 seconds. You know, it's funny, I wasn't working that night. It was the night before Thanksgiving. My husband and I went into the game. Our daughter was flying in from Denver, so we were killing time to go to the airport. And so it's funny how sometimes you watch the game when you're covering it, right? And then you're just sitting there watching it with a glass of wine in your hand. It's funny how you look at it differently, and I'm even kidding.
Night and day sometimes. You notice stuff. You notice different things.
Right, and what I noticed, you know, I saw him yank Tatum, and I'm like, And I'm trying to think, did he miss a defensive assignment? Because that's often why Brad will put yank you. And then I'm like, no. You know, that first half that they played against the New York Knicks was their worst half of the entire year, their worst half of the season, maybe their worst half of basketball they played over the last several years. It was so bad. And he let him have it at halftime about shot selection, right? You know, Tatum has this penchant for taking a lot of long twos, which we know is the worst percentage shot in the NBA. That's been proven now. So what does he come down? He settles for a long 2-point jump shot, and that's why he gets the hook. So I'm thinking to myself, wow, this has never happened to this kid before. So I was just watching him. Now, I don't think I would have been doing that if I was covering the game. I'd be checking the timeout, and, you know, I do a running score for every game I cover. It's just old school in me, and I do it, and it requires you to keep track of who's coming in and out of the game. And I know they have all that, but I like to do my own. Well, I wasn't doing any of that. I was just watching, and I said to my husband, look, oh, he's mad. He was standing off to the side. And then you watch Jay Larinaga, the assistant coach, come over and, you know, try to usher him back in, and he's not having it. And then the second timeout, same thing. Standing away from the bench, arms folded. And it occurred to me, well, no one has ever done this to Jason Tatum before. And you know what? Let's see how he responds when he goes back in the game. Well, the good news was he went nuts, you know, and he played well and he scored, and they came back, not enough back to beat a lowly Knicks team that they never should have lost to. But so lesson learned, I guess. But I was surprised, Zach, because nobody really wrote about it the next day. I didn't hear about it the next day. So I just sort of sat on it, kept it to myself, and decided to pop it today.
Well, there was a game about 2 weeks earlier in Phoenix where I was in Portland, so I got up early and watched that game the next day. And I'm just, you know, again, this is now over coffee, groggy in my hotel. I get to the start of the second half. Tatum's not on the floor. What the hell is going on? So I start Googling around, like, did Tatum get injured? I missed it. No, they just benched him. You're not going to start the second half. So I started texting people, like, what the hell happened with Tatum?
Yeah.
I would, at some point this season, probably when they right the ship completely and they're number two or three in the East and everything's copacetic, someone is going to get the story. There have been some tough conversations, I think, probably between Brad Stevens and Jason Tatum early in the season. And Brad is like, it's the unknown, underrated part of him as a coach because he doesn't show it. He is a badass. Like, if you do not, he will just like Horford told me this last year. Shane Larkin told me, you can go back and read my story from the playoffs. He didn't get a loose ball, and Brad took him out of the game. Said, if you don't get that loose ball, and it was like not an easy loose ball. I went back and watched. He's like, if you don't get that loose ball, you're coming out. Like, that's it. Out. And like, if you don't do your job, as he likes to call it, you're just not going to play. And obviously, right. Some guys get more leeway than others, but like, he's been, like, he doesn't mess around.
He doesn't. And, you know, it's funny. I remember very, very beginning. This is how far back it was, when Evan Turner was still around. I remember saying, Evan Turner, you know, this even keeled demeanor that you look on the sidelines, right? You never see any emotion, although that's changing now. Have you noticed that? As his own stock has risen and his own comfort level in the NBA has risen, he's got more technicals. He's getting into it now. But I said to him, well, how did, you know, so when you make a mistake and he pulls you out, and he said, Jackie, look more closely. And I said, why? He said, he's saying all sorts of stuff under his breath. You guys just can't hear it, or you can't see it. He said, he's saying to me under breath, if you think you're going to get away with this, you're mistaken. I may or may not put you back in, you know. So he doesn't mess around. And that boy, you know, that boyish haircut and the boyish smile, that's all fine and good. But, and you know, to your point, Shane Larkin, if Shane Larkin doesn't get the loose ball, why is he in the game, Zach? He's to push pace and make hustle plays, right? That's his role on that team. So if you don't do that, why should he have you out on the floor?
The last Celtics thing before I ask you one random question is, we've mentioned the Marcuses, and one of the subplots to me this season is, how long is Marcus Morris going to keep doing this? He's
so
shooting.
Isn't it so great?
49%, 43% from three, which is completely outlandish given his career. He's a sixth man of the year candidate, at least on the fringes of the ballot, although he's now starting, so who knows when that, you know, when he's no longer allowed to be. That's, you know, it one of the reasons this lineup is working, and one of the questions that needs to be answered if it can sustain is because Marcus Morris is playing absolutely out of his mind. And if and when he goes into a prolonged slump, that will also test the sort of longevity of this group. So I'm curious about that. Can I ask you one random Jackie McMullen non-basketball question?
Of course.
So this popped into my head earlier today. What's the non-NBA event that was your most memorable non-NBA thing, or let's say non-basketball? What's the most memorable, not necessarily best, like what's the most memorable non-basketball thing?
Well, one of them was just last year, Zach, and it was you too, meeting President Obama. Wasn't that just incredible? For me, it was.
I want to talk about an event, though, like a sporting
event.
Meeting Obama.
Well, that's easy.
Meeting Obama at the Sloan Conference. My wife is incredibly jealous of me, which is rare. So that was exciting for me.
It's one of the biggest thrills of my life. It really was. He's just so dynamic and charismatic. And whenever I walked around the corner and he said, "Jackie Mac," almost fell over.
I don't think I ever said this, but now you're bringing it up, so I'm going to say it. He claims to read my 10 things column. He was like, when's your 10 things coming out? Is it coming out Friday? I was like, that's not, I said to him, I was like, that's not a real thing. Somebody prepped you. There's absolutely no way.
He does. He's a basketball fan. But anyway, but non-basketball event. Oh my gosh. Do you realize some of the things I've seen, Zach Lowe?
No, I'm
talking. There in 1986. What are you talking about?
Well, what I just happened to walk by the TV in our offices on the way down here, and they're promoting the Buster Douglas 30 for 30. In my lifetime, if you had just sort of given me, like, what's a non-basketball thing you would have just liked to be at, that might it's in the top three. I haven't thought about it because it would be a total – like, I've been to baseball games, football games. It would be something completely out of my wheelhouse, like boxing. And that just that is just one of five sporting events in my entire life where I get goosebumps thinking about it. I remember exactly where I was. I remember everything that was going on. It was people who weren't alive then, and I was only like 11 or something. Like, it was impossible. It was like people talk about things that are like the Warriors losing is impossible. Like, the Warriors were in Game 7 last year. Mike Tyson losing was like impossible.
It just could not be done.
Let alone by this fat guy that you never heard of. It was an absolutely impossible thing. So that's why I thought
it was. Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I never in my lifetime, and this is going to sound funny to people, thought the New England Patriots would ever win a Super Bowl because they were so bad. My dad used to take me when I was a kid, and we'd sit on the metal seats, and people would get drunk and throw stuff, and my dad finally decided, well, we can't come here anymore. They were called the Patsies. So I was there when Adam Vinatieri kicked that field goal and beat the greatest show on turf, and that was one of the most incredible things I've ever seen. And that was a really, really memorable moment. But there are so many. I'm a big tennis fan. I would have loved to have seen, you know, some of the great Wimbledon matches that unfolded. I'm also a huge Olympic fan. There's so many Olympic events that I would have loved to have seen. One of the greatest events I ever covered that no one's ever heard of anything about it was I covered Henley, the Rowan Regatta in Henley. And it was one of the coolest things I've ever, and right before I left, Jack Renold, who's since passed, he was the assistant athletic director at Northeastern, told me, make sure you bring a skirt and measure it with your ruler. I said, what are you talking about? He said, they won't let you in pants, and your skirt, there can't be more than 2 inches above the skirt and the knee, or they won't let you in either. I thought he was kidding. Thank God he said that, or I would have flown all the way to England, and I wouldn't have been able to get in. So I still have my medals from Henley. I bought some medals from a guy who was hawking actual Henley race medals on the side of the river, and I bought them, even though I've never rowed a second in my life.
Rowing seems terrible. All the people who row in college, like, unless you go to college because they have a super competitive crew team and that's why you're going, I just don't understand voluntarily deciding to wake up at 5 in the morning during college and, like, going to row on a river. I'd like to do it,
but my neck is so messed up now. I think that ship has sailed for me, or that skull has sailed for me. But it is something I would like to do, because I've got the Charles River right here in Boston. When I'm out, you know, we used to ride our bikes along there, and I used to watch them in those things, and I used to think, that looks fantastic. So, one of my laments. What are you going to do?
I'm going to think about this question that I asked you, for me, what it would be in my lifetime. It might be Tyson Buster Douglas. It would be some crazy
boxing. See, I don't care about boxing. So barbaric. I just never liked boxing. I covered a couple boxing matches, and I hated every second of it.
Really?
Doesn't do
well,
it
it's such
me.
As yeah, the circus. Barbaric. The circus would be terrible, and you didn't watch all these UFC weigh-ins. Where has a UFC weigh-in ever not ended in like a fake fight? It's every one that they show on TV ends in a fake fight. All right. Well, everybody, read Jackie's piece on Jaylen Brown and the Celtics. I thought it was a very good idea and well timed. And what else should we be looking for? Anything else? What can you say? What can you divulge?
Well, I'm heading to Denver, Colorado. Maybe we'll be reading about Jamal Murray a bit in the weeks ahead. That's the next thing on the docket.
He may
and
appear,
also, here's a tease. We call this a tease.
A tease in the
Something
business.
Something about Tiny Archibald.
Ooh.
Blast from the past. A little Tiny Archibald news coming up soon.
That's exciting. That's more exciting than Jamal Murray, although Jamal Murray is an interesting player. He may appear in my 10 Things column on Friday, actually.
Okay.
All right, Jackie Mack, the best.
Happy holidays, Zach.
Happy holidays to you and yours. I think I'm going to be seeing you in LA in about 5 weeks when we're out there for the jump and related things. So I very much look forward to that. And as always, thank you for everything and all the great work and your time.
Thanks, Zach. I love doing this with you.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.